This episode of Dollars and Cents is brought to you by Walmart Puerto Rico and Oriental.
Hey everyone, this is Michelle Cantravasquez, and I am the founder and editor of News Is My Business, an online news site based in San Juan about Puerto Rico's business community. In this episode of Dollars and Cents, we'll be touching on a number of economic issues with the governor of Puerto Rico, Ricardo Rosselló. Thank you, Governor, for being with us today. I know you have a very busy schedule, so let's get right to it.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. So let's talk about the economy. We all know that it's been going through significant challenges even before you took office. However, there are sectors that are already showing signs of improvement. For example, tourism is one of those. The exposure from Lin-Manuel Miranda and Jimmy Fallon have definitely put on a very positive face for Puerto Rico. But while there's much movement at the cruise ship ports and passenger traffic is certainly picking up at the airports, the truth is that there are still certain areas that could use some attention.
That's right.
For example, the transportation issues between Puerto Rico, Vieques, and Culebra.
Yes.
Those two islands definitely depend, their economies depend on tourism. So, you know, since the route shifted from Fajardo to Ceiba, there have been countless complaints. The most recent one was flooding in the parking area. And the other more significant one is the ticketing issues.
Yes.
So all of that said, can you basically tell us, you know, if there's anything new going on in that sense, when will, you know, tourists and visitors perhaps see the opportunity of buying tickets online or via an app?
Yep.
What's going on with that?
So there, thank you for the opportunity. And as you mentioned, I think tourism is one of the showcase economies that's flourishing. You know, we expect many good things after Hamilton being here, being showcased in the Tonight Show and so forth. People are starting to see that there is a lot of progress and there's a lot to see here on the island. Of course, we were also came into office with a commitment to transform many things. One of those aspects that we wanted to transform was the maritime transportation, particularly to our Vieques and Culebra. So with that, you know, transformation is seldomly smooth. Many times it is messy and it encounters obstacles. And it's no different in this case. We decided to shift to the short route, La Ruta Corta, which we feel is going to be better, you know, in the mid to long run for tourists and for our neighbors in Vieques and Culebra to come to the island. We embarked on a process so that we can get the area moving forward. But of course, we encountered certain obstacles along the way. We've been handling some of those obstacles as they come and manifest, all the while addressing some more chronic issues that
which
are...
Which is what, for example?
So for example, the functionality of the boats. Right now, we have two boats. Our expectation is that by... but we had sent a lot of them to go and get them fixed. Mm-hmm. So our expectation is by Holy Week, we should have four boats running, which that will make a marked improvement. And that's not even counting the two boats that we've gotten from the private sector.
Right.
So at some point in Holy Week, we should have six boats available for transportation, which should significantly enhance this. The other concerns were obviously we saw the flooding. That issue is being attended to. The lack of food.
What happened there?
Well, you know, it typically. It is a unfortunately a normal course of events when it rains as such, and you had the lack of drainage to get it out. So now we're working with the water and
but is it a flood prone area or was it just an isolated issue?
It is an isolated issue. It's just the drainage is not the best, so we need to fix it right. And that as we speak, folks are there fixing it. We had an issue with the parking that has been fixed. We had an issue with the with the road that has been fixed as well.
What about food and you know all the other amenities that people expect, you know, when having to wait?
Right. So with with regards to food, we're happy to say that just recently we opened a concessionary to provide food within the terminal, and are working now to create what we're calling a sort of a food truck park over there. So you will have both amenities available to you. And again, as we move on, the expectation is that platform will be much more permissive to tourists to be there, to have clarity, to have a good time if they need to wait.
What about ticketing? Are we going to see an app for that?
Yes. So our expectation is that by summertime, we should have a full transformation of many addressing some of these problems, which include virtual ticketing. So we will make a shift to that. And again, I know some of these changes can be complex, and some of them unfortunately take time, but we are committed to doing them. Case in point, moving to La Ruta Corta, of course, which we did. So the expectation, again, is that by summertime, we should have a system that is transformed and that it's ready to sort of piggyback on the P3 proposal that's out there right now. The RFP is out there, so we're waiting to see the response, and then hopefully we can have closing sometime in the next couple of quarters.
And so the two islands, aside from obviously providing better services to residents, should expect maybe a better tourism activity in coming months, because they survive on that.
Yeah, I certainly expect that. I mean, just now, and I know it's just one. One component, but just now we have more seats available on boats than we've had in the past couple of years. And that is understanding that we have two boats. One should be ready by February 8th. It's my belief that it should increase the passenger throughput for about 312 additional seats.
Okay.
That is the functionality part. The other part is the quality of service, the comfort that the tourists receive at these locations. And our commitment is to make all of those changes, whether it be over here in Ceiba or in Mosquito Bay, as we're making the transition. Again, recognizing that some of these transformations are a bit messy. The truth of the matter is that I feel optimistic that by come summertime, we should have a transformed maritime transportation system in Puerto Rico, which is a huge step and something that has been asked for in I don't know how many decades.
Decades, okay. And then on another topic, there have been several stories in recent weeks, actually as early as today, on the steps being taken to move forward with the privatization of the Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority. Today, the utilities executive director, Jose Ortiz, said there will be several phases leading up to December 11, when a contract should be signed with the company chosen to run the transmission and distribution system. Now, while all of this is happening, what is going on with the debt restructuring talks?
Yep.
Are creditors being informed of all of these steps that are being taken to privatize PREPA?
Well, yes, many of these steps are publicly known. You know, we got the market sounding for about five of these companies. They got shortlisted after that, and we got four at the end, I believe. But it is about twice as many as we expected, even the most optimistic of us at one juncture, which showcases that the market is responding well now. When the market responds well, it is a good signal as well for the bondholders. So it is, in my view, and we've been very transparent with our timeline. Again, as the executive director noted, we expect that by the December 10th to 15th timeline, we should be closing on a deal. Prior to that, of course, there's a lot of process evaluating the proposals, shortlisting.
And are the creditors involved in that process is my question.
Well, no.
Do they not need to be?
They don't need to be. Okay. They just need to be privy to the fact that this process is moving forward, and that we feel it's beneficial to all stakeholders, both, the U.S. citizens in Puerto Rico and of course, creditors as well.
And what's going on with the negotiations per se? Can you provide an update?
Well, you know, I am somewhat limited on what I can say there. I can say that as in the past, this seems to have cycles. There's a sort of cycle where things move forward. We arrive at preliminary agreements, and then there's other minutiae that comes into play and then stalls the talks. Of course, with the PREPA bondholders, as you know, it's not just one creditor. It's a few creditors that have different, I would say, aligned priorities. So it is complex, but nonetheless, we've made a proposal. We expect to see this move forward. Otherwise, Title III has its mechanisms, and we'll solve it that way.
And what do you say to the people that suggest that PREPA should be put under receivership?
Well, I would say take a look at what we're doing before. You know, it is easy to look at PREPA and say, PREPA has never done things right, so why should we believe they're going to do it now? Well, and this sort of conversation has also gone upwards to Washington at some point. So what I've done is very simple. Unfortunately, I didn't bring my roadmap here. I have roadmaps for different items, but I can certainly narrate it to our listeners. I've decided to write out a roadmap that establishes our objectives, the key levers, the timelines, the critical projects, and show them where we're at every one of these things. Our objectives, and I'll reiterate, is to have a modern system that is customer-centric, that is resilient, that is reliable, low cost, and that we can shift to renewables. In that sense, there are certain key levers, some of which we control, we meaning the government of Puerto Rico, and some of which the federal government controls. Mm-hmm. When I lay out all of those levers, it's the transformation law, which we passed. It is the unsolicited proposals, which we've started to get a lot of them, quite a few, which it's the market sounding, which we've done. It's the IRP, which we expect to have by a February, March time period. It is the operational efficiency that I am happy to say that Jose Ortiz has done a great job in getting operational efficiencies better. And it is, of course, the recovery funding. Mm-hmm. And when I showcase this to all of our friends in Washington and in Puerto Rico and the ones that might be thinking of a receivership, and I let them know what we've done and what other stakeholders need to do, they can see that what is within our power, whether it be the government or PREPA itself, we've done what we need to do, and we're pushing forward aggressively on that. I mean, there hasn't been any administration that has put this as a priority and has moved forward as quickly as we have. So I think it's uncalled for, and I, understanding the background of why they ask, but I would ask them to see what we're doing, see what our expectations are, measure us based on what we say we're going to do and the results that we achieve, and you'll see that we'll get this transformation process going, so much so that what I believe very few people thought was going to be the case by the end of 2019, we're going to have a transmission and distribution concession done.
And again, the economy depends on it.
It does.
It goes economy.
So that is why, and I had, we had a sort of a retreat for our government officials, and we discussed several items. One of the, I'm not going to go into all of the details, but in general, we spoke about the vision and what we wanted. But we also spoke about priority and key levers that we had to pull. And our Energy 2.0 model is one of our top three priorities, the administration.
All right. And so finally, can we talk about the recent comments by President Trump?
Yes, of course.
Regarding the request for additional nutritional assistance program funding. Has he responded to your letter yet?
No, he hasn't. I expect our staff has been reached out by the White House. We'll see where that goes. But I think it is troubling to see even if not if these statements are not made by the president himself, that there's this continuous flux of news coverage stating that sources say that the president doesn't want to give recovery money to Puerto Rico. And then to kind of support that, we see the memo that was drafted by the White House that says, you know, the NAP funding is not necessary. So my response to that is, to the president is, I want to have a face-to-face to see what, you know, what has driven you to these conclusions. I want to show you that these conclusions are ill-founded and are wrong, and that I think that he is getting the wrong advice on this. I think he's getting the wrong advice because saying that, you know, NAP relief is not necessary for Puerto Rico when we are the poorest jurisdiction, the most unequal jurisdiction, the one that has the lowest labor participation rate in the United States for decades on end, really is sort of a misunderstanding on the inequality issue that we have here.
And on top of that, Maria.
And on top of that, exactly, and to add insult to injury, Maria. And then the second component, which has been something we've been talking about, has been the slowdown in the recovery funding that should be heading to Puerto Rico. This has been a continuous criticism of mine for FEMA in particular. I mean, we worked together with FEMA, but certainly there are some things that are unequal here in Puerto Rico. You know, every state has the capacity to disburse their funds. In Puerto Rico, FEMA disburses the funds. Now, you might say, so what's the difference? Well, the difference, just pragmatically on results, if you take a timeline of events from when Katrina, for example, hit Louisiana and Maria hit Puerto Rico, and you see some of the permanent work, the project worksheets that are being moved forward. In Katrina, in Louisiana, by this time, there were about 9,400 projects. In Puerto Rico, there's about 44. So it's several orders of magnitude difference, and that has already been happening. We've been making the case so that we can be empowered to have that control, so that we can move projects out and get the funding flowing. But then on top of that, we hear that consideration about using some of this funding to fund the wall, being nonspecific about saying, you know, just getting recovery funding, which might impact folks in Texas, in Florida, South Carolina, California, and so forth, not only Puerto Rico and Virgin Islands. It is very concerning. I just want some clarity. I wanted to to say, let's talk about this. And my opinion is very clear. You're either on the right side of history here or on the wrong side of history. You're either supporting the resources to ensure that U.S. citizens rebuild effectively, or you're taking those resources away and using them for, you know, for an aspiration, a personal aspiration that you have.
Do you foresee things slowing down even further with the furlough? I mean, is that something that's affected as well?
It is. And let me explain, because this is, as with many things, the federal government is complex. So with a furlough, certain non-essential duties are sort of taken aback, right? The essential ones continue. So some folks say, well, there's still some money flowing, and there is with FEMA, for example. But for the bigger projects and for the biggest decisions, it has to either be the CFO of FEMA, which is furloughed, or it has to be the joint field officer over here, the director, which is Mike Byrne, who is also furloughed. So
wow,
you have your top positions that make decisions. Now, right now, they're not working, and it is hard to move the needle, particularly on important projects that we want to move forward. That said, again, there is still some trickling, but we are trying to get a better gauge for, you know, what does the furlough mean with FEMA funding. Another thing that's delayed is, you know, we've been trying to get the power to disburse, and this has been taking a while, but The people that make that decision are furloughed as well. So that's essentially the gist of it. It is affecting the recovery. It is slowing it down. And my hope is that we can end the shutdown, get some clarity on what the resources that are coming to Puerto Rico and from our end, as we've been doing and as we've been showing, make sure that we have all hands on deck so that recovery process can move forward quickly in Puerto Rico.
And the local government has also been taking steps to deal with that, specifically with tourism. Again, tourism put up the money to keep the forts open.
Yes.
Is the government going to be putting any more money into the pot, for example, for TSA agents at the airports? I mean, is there any other area that the local government could be assisting as this happens?
Well, we are under a fiscal crunch, but of course there are certain priorities that are important for our security and so forth. We'll take them case by case, but our expectation is to make sure that that we can resolve this shutdown. It doesn't help anybody, frankly. So hopefully we can end the shutdown and get all of the services here in Puerto Rico.
Governor, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And maybe we'll meet again.
Of course. I know there's a lot of topics, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to address your listeners.
To our listeners, if you have a topic you would like to hear us discuss in this space, please send us an email to news@newsismybusiness.com with your suggestions. Until next time.